optimism that we have, occasional optimism anyway, it depends where you are, isn't it, of a coming summer. And hopefully here it won't be as fiery, you might say, as it was last year. Perhaps, we'll see. But last Wednesday I had snow here again in the morning, and it's been pretty cool at night indeed. But that's the way it goes on this little planet that we live on. It's true, we're born in this little planet, aren't we? And we've got a short lifespan, very short. I always stress this because it's so true. And the longer you live, in fact, and more people you'll see, even from school, early school. I can remember a girl at school when I was about 7 or 8 years old who sat opposite me, or across from me, and who just disappeared one day. And it turned out that she'd died of, I think it was leukemia. And that brings it home to you at an early age that things can be very, very temporary. And more so as you get older and you understand death much more easily, I think. Everyone tries to deny it to an extent because otherwise we'd all cave in and be running for Prozac before we knew it. Because it's not a natural thing to dwell on death naturally all the time. And they have terms for it in psychiatry and psychology and so on to do with that very, very topic, because we are definitely, definitely influenced by the system in which we're born naturally. We're in a very materialistic system today, in a phase. It's hard to, I wouldn't say it was a post, totally post-religious phase, or post-Christian phase for sure, because Christianity changed long, long before, centuries before too, because money has always been part of the system, and you need money to survive in the system. And we really don't know how we'd survive at all. In the past, that is, how could we have survived unless you really lived in a communal type, collectivist type society? Perhaps a long, long time ago, we certainly did. And we know that even from the different societies are always digging up across Europe, that the people were, the different groups and ethnic groups were very, very old indeed, and had lived after ice ages and came back into the same countries between thaws, then back out again and back in again. That's what happened. And they know this too. But again, there were more collectivist society or tribal societies, and there were, they call them hunter-gatherers, but I think they were agricultural too. And that is have some kind of order within society for it to function at all. And that's the same anywhere across the planet. But once you came into this odd thing called money, and it is odd, isn't it, really? It's a substitute for wealth, real wealth. And real wealth initially was what you needed. It was basics and necessities. And eventually you find that the richer families had simply killed those around them, stolen their properties, and that technically was wealth. And then once you could transmute that into coinage, for instance, about 800, it was 800 BC or so that they actually came out with actual coins, they claim. Before that, they used strips of gold, which they would cut off. They'd wind it around their arms even thousands of years ago. And then before that, too, they used silver. Silver was more common than gold. But this odd metal became a substitute, as I say, for wealth, real wealth. And I say real wealth at one time was basically your necessities, what you had to live on, land, you could grow food, or you could hunt, and things like that. These were basic necessities. But now wealth has become really divorced from necessities. And those who know how to accumulate wealth and down through the ages, I mean, become awfully, awfully, awfully powerful people, and or powerful families for that matter. And today you'll find the most very, very wealthy people have been given positions to control us and to have control over us as supposedly philanthropists and inventors or whatever they also want to call them, although really they're just big businessmen in an age of public-private partnerships. And I did the talks years and years ago on the public-private partnerships that came out of the Trilateral Commission's findings of how they wanted to change or run the world then, and the CFR branch of it too, said it was time for these philanthropists, these suddenly, people you'd never heard of before, who suddenly became famous using the fame machine, the same machine that creates stars in music or movies, started to create them as though they were some kind of a genius, you see, and they should participate in running the world and governing the world. But they never ever mentioned the fact, well, how can you have a democracy when you have people now being up, basically self-appointing them, or groups like the private organization CFR, private group, telling them to just take their positions of power over us. That's not democracy. It's not even governance in the term that you know of it. Perhaps a new term that you don't know about, of course, because there's always two ways to look at everything, especially in today's very deceptive system. But the system that they're bringing us into, it's supposed to be post-democratic, and during this period of time of post-democratic governance, you are definitely being ruled by organizations and foundations with front groups that are appointed or self-appointed to govern us, basically, either under the guise of environmentalism. Well, do you, is there some kind of special party that calls itself so that they can vote for? Or are they simply there because they appointed themselves to be there? Who appointed them to attach themselves to local councils or city councils or state councils or provincial councils and federal councils, for that matter? Did anyone get a vote on that? No, it didn't happen. And what I'm just simply saying here is we don't really participate much at all in the way we're ruled because we are ruled, and that's the difference between democracy and rulership. In rulership, you're simply ruled like monarchy would rule you. But it's been done so slickly that people have kind of accepted it because no one points out to them, wait a minute, this isn't a democracy. Yeah. And the Club of Rome, of course, a big think tank for this organization, who hit upon that idea a long time ago. It was part of their job to find a way to unite the planet. Remember, it's a global system here for global governance. And they said that they find a common enemy to unite the whole world, but like to save the world, you see. So they came up with the idea that global warming and famine and so on and the like would fit the bill. And that's where the climate change and all that came out of too. That's also where Agenda 21 came out of. Agenda 21 for the 21st century, with all of its subsections to be signed and signed and signed throughout this whole century. And carbon taxes, all that, it's all out of the same agenda, you see. Well, we didn't get to vote on it. You're not going to get to vote on it. And you simply have to believe it. Well, it's quite amazing to watch religions being destroyed by the same organizations certainly as now, as they give you a new belief system, and it really is based on belief, isn't it? What you believe, and they're not going to give you a vote because they know a lot of folk won't believe what they're being told. So therefore, you're not going to get the vote. But don't forget, the Trilateral Commission was designed to get the big agenda done without people voting on it. They'd work behind the scenes and appoint leaders to governments across the world, and they've been awfully successful. And they came out with that, I think, during the Carter administration. Was the first administration to suddenly announce this whole trilateral organization to the world. And Brzezinski, too, was a member who helped set it up, so they could get things done behind the scenes without the public even knowing about it. So that's what we're living in today. So they're bringing in a controlled society, a scientifically controlled society, they claim. But even their sciences and their claims of things need an awful lot of faith to believe in, obviously. So it's a religion, of course, to an extent, for those who have to follow it. For those who manage it, they don't believe in it themselves. They know it's an excuse to bring in a long-awaited scientific, humanistic kind of society, where H.G. Wells mentioned it in Things to Come, where literally the scientific elite would rule the world on behalf of those who owned it, basically. It hasn't changed the agenda, you see. And that's just a brief recap, so I don't want to go into all again, but getting back to money, and so money's always been a big part of it. And in money, there's nothing you can't do if you control billions of dollars, for instance. Like the think tanks, there's nothing you cannot do. They don't get taxed, the foundations. They can invest as well. And with investments and massive returns, they can, and they have, of course, create massive armies of demonstrators of all kinds who are all on board with the exact same agenda, climate change, or save the planet, environmentalism, etc. It's all the same agenda. Depopulate, bring down the human species, etc. And by eliminating industry and the death across Europe and the Americas, they boasted about it. I think Maurice Strong even boasted about it too, that they'd have to, the worst thing that the West had was massive industry. They'd have to eliminate it and reduce everyone to a state of poverty, obviously. Eventually that will happen. Because we haven't adjusted our system to manage us all in a post-industrial society. We're still getting taxed. We still have masses of payments for our country's debts to the World Bank, etc. So we've got nothing to make up the difference, really. You can't all work in computers. We can't all compete with the whole world working with computers. And it's not meant to last forever. It's a partial way measure to something else in the future, of course. I was looking too at again, I've always kept an eye on the population figures put out for every country. And for so many years now, they've been on and on about overpopulation, but the countries in the West are declining. And they're only kept up by large immigration. And it's going to continue, of course. And again, lots of migrants come in too, from large family nations. and with a taste of more wealth, they, no doubt at all, will eventually go the same way, of having fewer members of the family, and they prefer to have that extra money, etc., just like everybody before them has done in the West, and the population will decline again and again and again. Japan, there's an article out too, how their population has really hit an all-time low for births today. They're going to have to accept more and more migrants to keep their own population up. Mind you, Japan has a lot of real heavy industry still on the go. Otherwise, they'll go the same way as everybody else. So what we're looking at too is a controlled system of gradual reduction of the population. It's actually speeding up quite a bit now, as the people go the same way of preferring the luxuries of life and the more holidays abroad or whatever it happens to be that they're into, and not having families, which costs a lot of money. So you're back to money again. Money's a tremendous control factor, where people, many people, and even before and after Charles Galton Darwin's book, The Next Million Years, money's always been used as a weapon. There are many ways to try and coerce people not to have children. And the lack of money is an awfully good way to do it, because children will cost money. And again, if in a system where everyone now must work, including men or women, or you don't get so many families today, except very wealthy families that can have a person at home to look after the children, or afford a nanny or something like that, then it's even harder for people to have children as you go down the class system. And yes, the class system is alive and well. Let's not kid ourselves. It's definitely still here, alive and well. They don't talk about it much, but it's there all right. And in the class system of this modern class system, it's you can have a bureaucratic class, and a very large bureaucratic class now. When you look at how many people today work for government directly, and all the agencies that are indirectly involved in getting paid by government, which is all taxpayer-funded, in other words, it's staggering today. It really is staggering. So the taxpayer has to fund it all. And obviously, if money is real at all in the way it's supposedly managed and handled, in a state where we're supposedly all bankrupt, all personally and nationally we're bankrupt, and then internationally everybody's bankrupt, supposedly, to the World Bank, how can they keep this creating money out of nothing, which is what it is, isn't it? You can't do it yourself, because you'll get a bill or a final demand, or are you going to the bankruptcy court if you can't pay your debts? McNation, strangely enough, with the best supposedly brains in the business working as economists for countries and nations and businesses and so on at the top, supposedly we can just continue this forever. Well, we can't, obviously. If it's real, eventually the piper must be paid. The only way we can go on like this is if none of it is real at all. And Alan Greenspan said about America, the US, he said they could never go bankrupt now because they simply print money. To print money today is still used, the term, even though most of it's electronic. So you don't even need that at all. It's just punched into computers and that's it. So if there's no real accounting of money, how can they constantly have people who are managing it all for us and deciding to make it more expensive for us to live, buying basics, because that is the agenda now, to go into austerity by upping all the prices of food, etc. It's been going on steadily since the last crash, and it was authorized to do so by all the governments involved to start jacking up basic energy costs, because that's a big part of it. Anything that's beneficial to personal and national and collective survival, like health, for instance, and food, is going to get more and more restrictive and more costly. And again, as you cut back too, and all of the alternatives that are not even going to be used as a supplement, really, to produce energy in emergencies like coal, etc., they're all getting closed down and dismantled. When the time comes, we're going to be in an awful state. But we're all supposed to suffer for the good of the planet, we're told. But it's the old eugenic system and scientific management of the true socialist ideal, as opposed to the one that the people at the bottom think is all about, as all be nice to each other. No, true socialism at the top was a scientifically managed society. That's what it was supposed to end up being. All the top capitalists were on board with that way of managing the system. It's easier to control and manage the public that way, as far as you're concerned. So we're supposed to go into austerity and at the same time pay more and more and more for the same vital necessities. That's what's... The agenda's happening this way because it's planned that way. And don't think for a second that nations that can get on board with world wars and so on very quickly and gear up towards it very quickly and be very efficient at it very quickly couldn't possibly manage a system and keep you all living at a good standard of living and and a protein, a good protein intake, etc. At the same time, they couldn't do it. Of course they could do it. Of course they could do it. The cutbacks are planned that way because you're supposed to have a big, big population drop by about 2050, according to the big think tanks that work for with the military, the future societies that work for the military and the think tanks. And 2050, they don't say why it's suddenly going to drop, but they say it's suddenly going to drop. So I guess that'll be when the price of butter goes up to about $50 a pound or something. Has it doubled this recent year? Pretty well in Canada. To about $6, I think it is, or just over $6. So that's what we're living in, folks. We're living in a planned system, a planned takedown of all the things that were beneficial to a healthy society, which also obviously leads towards a population growth. If people get married and have children, for instance, or even if they don't get married and women decide to have children and they're able to afford it, then that's detrimental to their agenda for depopulation step by step. So you simply make energy, which is awfully vital for a healthy society, make it hard and more expensive. Folk can't heat themselves properly. When you can't do that, houses get mouldy and very unhealthy to live in. You get pneumonia, people die, especially the young and old to start with. You add malnutrition along the way, and it'll happen all the faster. And when you look at all the supposed well-funded greenie organisations out there, they're all part of this make-believe system of experts going to help save the planet. Because that's what it is. It's a make-believe system here. Because it, yes, they really want to believe in it to believe they could do that at all. They're all well-funded, well-organized, etc. And how dare anybody train youngsters to be revolutionaries to bring down the population of the planet? Do you get a vote on that in this supposed democratic system? Well, you don't, do you? We live in a world that's hostile. The elements are hostile to nature. The first thing we do in any civilization is try to get a shelter to stay in. And if you can at least keep the rain off you long enough, you might live longer. If you can't keep it off, you're not going to live terribly long. You need to heat yourself in cold climates. You need a lot of good fuel to make this happen. And it's going to be cheap enough to make you, but so you can afford it, if you're going to keep money on the go, that is. Don't forget, you have societies where you wouldn't really need money. You can get issued credits by the state, like Bertrand Russell said they would eventually. Electronic ones, and they could withhold them if you're bad, or like you simply cut off your payments and so on. Some of us are already going through that kind of problem right now. You're not living in democracy. You're not living in a system of even moderate free speech. It's not moderate anymore. If you say anything at all that can explain what's happening to the people, you will be attacked. And you don't have to have any hate involved in it. You simply have to state the facts and you will be attacked. That's how it is. We're in a new chapter, as I've said before, of the control system. And it won't be pleasant down the road as it becomes more and more oppressive, more dictatorial, and as they force more and more people to buckle under, or you're going to starve to death. You are. They will do. They will use all these techniques. Don't think you're in some kind of advanced, civilized system here. All the signs around you are of just the opposite. All these techniques have been used before in the worst tyrannical systems that we've ever seen on the planet. And that's just a fact. But again, it was planned long ago, and Bertrand Russell said that the state would issue credits eventually. Now, you don't have to get right from the government. They can use private organizations to do it, right? And they'll be accessing your bank accounts and everything else, and then you'll eventually won't be able to save them up. You have to use them every month, that's what Russell said. So at the bottom level, you know. Your elite couldn't be as equal as you, naturally. As Orwell said, some are more equal than others in such utopias. Yeah, they can freeze you out altogether if you've been socially undesirable in your comments or your behavior. And use it as a form of punishment. Well, you're seeing that happening in the world today. It's going to get worse. So I think it's time, I really do think it's time, that we should just toss this idea of democracy out the window. Because we're not in one. We're not in a democracy. And governments are not listening to the general public at all on anything. Because the governments are on board with big international corporations, as Carl Quigley said they would be, because the CEOs of the corporations are part of the new governing system. They have been for a long time. And Carl Quigley said, this is the new CEOs of this new feudal system are the CEOs of international corporations. That's who governments listen to. That's what politicians listen to. Because who gives them money to run for their elections? And believe you me, when the corporations give you money, it's not because they like your haircut or something. It's because they expect and expect little favours to be, that they'll ask down the road to be complied with and reciprocated, right, for their donations. That's how it works. That's how it works. Now, this week I was going to talk about a whole bunch of things, kind of tentatively, because there really is not much news at all. In fact, if you look at the news today, it's like Groundhog Day again from 20, 30 years ago. It's just the same news, same wars, you know, same topics. And anything that really matters, what really is missing, is what you used to get when you had at least some kind of show of democracy, where governments would have to insert the newspapers, and the papers would have to comply and show the public at least what the governments were working on, different bills and so on. And that way the public could get involved and have their say before anything was passed or done, and they might even just reject the bill eventually. Well, you don't get that now, if you've noticed. You don't get told about bills until they are passed. You didn't even know they were getting passed or who drafted them up or anything. And sometimes it's not even your own countries that draft them up. So you're in a oddball system here, and they'll still go through the same motions of vote for this person or that person who says the expected slogans, who repeat them, of whatever party they belong to. It's that obvious today, isn't it? But in reality, we're being managed in a system where they're not happy policing simply speech. Now, I understand, too, that all this would come down. I knew it 30 years ago, because I can remember 30 years ago when they said, before you were given the internet to the public, that the system would be given eventually, a system would be given to the public where mass communication across the planet would be very easy, and they'd have to gear up for information warfare, because there'd be so many different countries all vying for power over other countries by using this particular new system. But they also mentioned about it might be hard to keep control over the public with this ability to communicate their ideas, information to each other. That was a scary thing to those in power. Naturally, always has been. That's why they generally give you the topics they parrot on about, even if they're not true, or even if they're just trivia. It doesn't matter, as long as they've got you parroting about some other distraction. But you'll admit today, too, you have a society, and you can't tell who is who on the internet with all the different chat rooms. So there were talks, again, years ago about this, from published documentation on the studies, and they found that you had all these different, call it sock puppet bots and so on, all chatting, literally computers pretending they're people chatting to you, all set up by intelligence, to have you all fighting with each other. And then you've got thousands and thousands of people paid to do the same thing online live, just to disrupt everything and to get everybody going at it. A tremendous power when you think about it, when you can get everybody talking about the same things or giving them the right things to argue about all at the same time across the world. And what you're doing, you're not creating a logical system, a system based on logic or logical argument. You're giving them nothing but emotive content. And immediately if you get emotive content, you'll get them arguing. And when they get an argument, and people today aren't polite about it. They do it so often, and it's almost like a dreamlike state there. And I really think they are in a dreamlike state, to be honest with you. Stuck in their little rooms or whatever they're stuck in. Yelling at each other and texting each other. And it's all abuse, abuse, abuse. And it's the main topics are topics they've been given to argue about. Isn't that amazing to watch it happening? It really is amazing. A few years ago, I put up an article. It was from MIT, and it was a professor there who literally stated that they were going to put out false histories, and then they would have the students work on these, disseminating these false histories in a test. And obviously they've got real-time tap into all the chatter on the internet by one of the government agencies to get that permission to access it all. But then they could actually see how quickly this chatter was picked up and repeated by everybody else. And the way they could devise a false hit, they could get everybody fighting everybody else. Do you realize we're living in one of the biggest laboratory that's ever been created, and most folk don't even know it, because we just adapt into it so easily, because especially when they're younger, it's always been there for them, and to them it's all quite natural. It's only a natural system they know, and it's not natural at all. You see what I'm saying? And you find older folk too going right into it, thinking, well, until they forget what the past was like, and they forget what caution is like, and they forget how nasty, really nasty, childhood behavior can really be, as they start to alter repeat childhood behavior by abusing each other like crazy. Isn't that amazing? Now, all this is well known by those who are studying us all the time. But as I say, that there's lots of the agencies out there deliberately pursuing this very path of causing the problems. Years ago, I said, I didn't trust politics. I naturally had come to the conclusion long before I'd read anything about other people who'd come to the same conclusions. Like I mentioned before, the Durants, for instance, or Earl Durant, he eventually came to the conclusion after following communism and all the rest of it. He said that people who go into politics want power, and people who want power could never be trusted, and so he could never have peace. So he gave up pretty well towards the end of his life. But he wasn't the only one who had done that. And you find that George Orwell gave you the same idea as an Animal Farm. But he also gave you, in 1984, the system of total control, where even your hopes of a helping hand were fake to get out of a hellish system of oppression. Because 1984 had lots of elements of the Soviet system at that time, with its mock trials, etc. Where everyone confessed about everything you were told to confess about, you'd do it. And if you're tortured enough, you will. Just to hear the end of the torture. Of course you will. But he also showed you, they'd give you fake systems of, here's the truth, come here and get the truth. And Winston, the character in 1984, really thinks that he's being brought into an inner revolutionary group who are going to overthrow Big Brother in this totalitarian, tyrannical system. And he was being set up by the very system that already ruled. I give talks on that too, how you can't trust anything out there. Because there's nothing new under the sun. And organizations have always put out fronts to draw people out, to use them often, and at the very least is to point them out. See, we told you these crazies are out there. That's always happened, that will always happen. Because 1984 was a textbook in how it's done, in a sense. And 1984 was about a system where all hope is pretty well gone. And here's a glimmer of light, and you think, wow, I'll grab a hold of that. And so you do. And again, sure enough, it was false. You're being led into a trap. To suck you out, you see. Whenever you get emotional about something or angry, you better stop and ask you who's caused you to be emotionally angry about something and why. Because if your point of even existing in, say, a political type system is to run things logically and practically, then you can't allow the emotion to come in. But when emotion starts to reign supreme, you have civil wars. And then you have, and someone's playing you all. And then you have the revolutions that have been hell in the past for most people. And they've never been honest either. You know. And when any materialistic, atheistic type system comes in, or even humanistic, which is a religion itself actually, system comes in, they're always ruthless. They're practical, all right. They won't sit and listen to you plead for your life. And they won't listen to you plead to have better care, whatever it is, in the dungeon you're thrown into. And they'll think nothing of torture either, because torture for sadists is even more addictive as they go on through it, you see. And people who crave power are often, very often, sadistic as well. They're sadists. What I'm getting at is you better all be awfully careful, very careful, of what's presented to you as facts. When you look at the writings that are put out by communists, for instance, the early communists, then when they created the Young Communist Leagues across the old Soviet Union, they had textbooks for those who managed them all on using the youth to demand the very things that the leaders of the parties wanted them to demand. It's easy to get children, youngsters, to demand things by showing them a partial story. Because you see, when you're young, you see things in black and white. You don't see the grey areas, and it's in the grey areas you have all the big deceptions on the go. So it's easy to get them into an emotional, aggressive fury against the older folk or something, or whatever it happens to be, whatever target they're given to target. On behalf of those at the top, they want to use them all for those purposes. When you're being used like that, I would never join anything. Because I'm telling you, the amount of manipulation over groups of people, Bernays talked about it, right? Edward Bernays, and he said in his manual, really, for marketing and using groups and so on, and don't forget, he literally was an advisor and a manipulator that worked on behalf of about four or five different presidents. Even how to get a country into a war, World War I, he and a few other ones were given that task, how to persuade American public to be all for the war, to get them on board before they get in. And they hired the biggest marketing company that existed at the time in New York City, and they came out with it. And persuade America to go into the war in 1917. And afterwards, they were so bold and brazen about it, he wrote a book about how they'd managed it. It's quite fascinating. But he said, too, in his book about propaganda and so on, he said that for marketers, don't create a group unless you really have to, if it doesn't exist. He says, you go into different cities and look up, look at a phone book, he said. At that time, it was all phone books. And he said, look up organizations. And you get your church organizations, you could have education organizers and teachers associations. And you go to the head of each one, and religious and so on. Go to the heads of them and get them on board with you. Meaning, you'll come to natural agreements, and it could be financial, you see. Because they have their flocks and their followers, and they can get them all to follow, you see. Then you've saved all that money and persuasive footwear and all the rest of it, padding around house to house. Use existing organizations, no matter what it is you're there for. You go to get the religious organizations behind you, even though what you want them to do is not religious in nature, you see. They're organizations, they have many members, and if they can persuade them to follow along, it's a good thing for, well, he says, you've done it, you see. Quite easy, isn't it? Well, education, as you know, is a great tool for those who already rule the world, because there's more propaganda and indoctrination going on there to create the future revolutionaries, and those who will demand this and demand that, on behalf of the very, very old and wealthy folk who really are their bosses, which they don't even know exist. But that's a lot of power, and it shouldn't be in schools as far as I'm concerned. I don't know about you, this is my opinion. Everybody is allowed their opinion, and you've got to allow that too, because if you've been intolerant to all opinions, then eventually someone will be intolerant towards you. Obviously. So anyway, we live in a completely different system, as I say, than the one you're brainwashed into believing exists. But if you can really try and keep apart from the stories you're reading or whatever happens, and always ask who benefits from this, who's behind it, do a little bit of digging, you'll be surprised how quickly you can come up with the funders of organizations. And you can even look at some of the top speakers who might, if you really are, you know, if you've got a good mind that won't get bored that easily, you actually find out who's given talks to different organizations that you never even imagined they'd be involved in. It gives you an idea of who runs the agenda. Is it the same global agenda? It generally is, actually. And you find out who benefits, etc., etc. But if you follow the careers of the leaders of NGO groups, you'll see they're lifelong. They've got pension plans and retirement plans and all, but they're awfully well managed, well trained, and well paid. So I've been prattling on here, and I didn't even go into this tonight. But as I say, the news is, there's a dearth of news out there. There really is. As we go into this new chapter, you're not supposed to be told what really is happening to you. And you get lots of little nicey-nicey stories that you'll never remember the next day because they're irrelevant to the world. Lots of nice photographs of pets and things and rescued animals and stuff like that. But again, it won't make any difference to the world. This is a substitute for what used to be news. But what you are hearing occasionally from some media and newspapers across the planet, what you will hear, you even get the full speeches of the radical, the long-trained from youth, picked from youth, the trained future leaders of the world, giving their far, far, I'd call them tyrannical speeches on the world they want to bring in. And it's exactly from the same agenda from 1950s, 1960s, 70s to the present time, hasn't veered off it at all. And the world will be brought down into austerity. I gave the talks years ago, and believe me, they're going to do it. They never ever change their agenda. Never ever do. And they needed an enemy to unite the planet. Well, man's the enemy of the planet, therefore you're united against yourselves, and you're going to pay for it dearly, you see. Quite something. A lot of prattling I'm doing here, but as I say, there's no news at all really out there to give to people. You will see, too, the massive changes, as I say, not just in family units. We've seen that over for a long, long period of time, even when I was small, too. I think that the family was becoming more and more dysfunctional. It had done it long before I was born, even after World War One. They said it was going down the hill, and then World War Two came along, and with the strangest bizarreness, very schizophrenic reality for people of military fighting age at that time, World War Two, because they had all the movies again churned out like a machine, churning them out, propaganda machines aimed at them about the happy dancing things they could do. They're all in uniform, and all these war movies, propaganda movies, and all from America, shown across, especially Britain. And that literally, I think that changed the minds of everybody who saw them, especially the young girls, because they thought that they deserved what they saw in the American movies. You know, money, good money, complete fiction and fantasy. They thought that every American lived in a big mansion. They really thought that, lots of them, from the movies that were getting churned out. and everybody had a car, everybody had a phone, which is true. They had phone. Most folk in Britain, even much, much later than that, that I knew when I was growing up, didn't have phones either. It was too expensive. Most folk I knew didn't have cars either. So you can see how attractive it was to see these movies with this display of wealth. Of course, they didn't know the reality of it. They didn't know, too, a lot of the working people across America were living in much the same conditions as they were. You know, the only difference is they might technically own their house, but the same size houses, too, than the council houses they were renting in Britain. You know, so really, there wasn't much difference that way. So what I'm saying is we get our thoughts given to us mainly through fiction, for those who've never figured that out. And though, you know, I say it so many times, people keep forgetting. Why do you think, just do a survey on the old movies from, say, right up and through 1930s, right through to the 1970s, say, the time when the stars were getting incredible amounts of money at them, throw them. And look at the stars. The scripts were churned out. They even made movies, like John Wayne admitted to. Many of the movies he was in took 3 days to shoot. You just went along, made them up as you went along, basically. And John Wayne was literally the same character in every movie. He was the same personality in every movie. And lots of folk were like that, you see. Didn't matter, but they were given so much money because fiction is a great tool to use for the public to be on your side when there's wars coming up, things like that, you see. Or as distractions, too, away from the reality or the misery that perhaps you're reliving in. So fiction will always be used as a great pacifier, a great manager, you might say, of our free time, for sure, and to give us the thoughts they say that we should be thinking about, or giving you lots of thoughts that don't matter to power because it just distracts you from doing anything constructive, perhaps, that power wouldn't like. A tremendous tool, tremendous tool. But most of your ideas you get from fiction, as I say. But you've seen the family has been destroyed, you've seen different kinds of families being created, but even with all of this, with today's society, all groups and all types of people are having awful problems with relationships. Doesn't matter what they are, basically, or how they're constructed. Doesn't matter. Because today's life is so artificial, isn't it? From what went before in the past. It's really so artificial. And what we do even do for a living is often so artificial as well. And you can imagine, too, when you go into the future societies, and I've done talks for years, too, many years, on the projections of how it's going to be in the future, right down to, it was not just transhumanism, it was right down to creating specific types of humans for specific jobs. They have literally official scientific books out there from big science foundations where scientists discuss genetic manipulation beyond Brave New World and simply getting created and basically artificially and so on, but way beyond that. Into a world where if we need so many people to go under the sea to do undersea welding on oil sea rigs and things like that, then we can create these people to withstand incredible pressures and even have gills. This is what they say they think they could do. You understand, with unlimited financing, there's really hardly anything you can't do. Really. And that's what research and development is all about. That's where most of the money for war goes to, is research and development. So you've always got to have perpetual states of war. The Cold War was the greatest boon they ever had for R&D, research and development, for missiles and things they'd never use, because most of the money was going into the satellites that they eventually used for surveilling everybody. That's what the real purpose of it. And they knew that at the beginning. That's where it's all going to go eventually. The totally controlled, monitored society. And so you get it through, again, fiction. And so, by the way, John, not normally John Wayne as a person, I'm sure he was a nice, nice guy. But what I'm saying is, look at all these famous actors or actresses. And many of them, as I say, were the same characters in every movie they were in, because they were not character actors, but they could adapt to different roles. Most of them, that is. Now, I'll just give you a few articles here to look up to if you want to, that gives you a little bit of food for thought. As I say, this week it's not in-depth or new in any way. It's just stating the obvious that there's just nothing to really prattle on about this week as far as news goes. I could certainly give lots of talks and a lecture kind of forum on different things, but I've been awfully busy this week myself doing things that are awfully, awfully important, because I myself am getting problems from different sources today. As I say, we're in a very intolerant system, and unfortunately it's going to be much more intolerant as time goes on, and they only want certain of their own people, I'd say, giving you any information whatsoever from the authorized sources from themselves, which means 99% of the real information is going to, you'll never hear it in the first place. It's never going to happen. That is the new system we're in, you know. Under the guise, it's all for peace, from the very sources of those who create no peace. That's quite some. But I'll put an article too about the new data privacy guidelines that it says it carries the hopes of hundreds of millions of people around the world, including the US, to rein in abuses by big tech companies. Well, that's a joke, because that's never going to happen. The big tech companies are part of the big oligarchical system. The rulers, basically, and they're completely interlaced with all the top spy agencies, as we know. And spy agencies have lots of legitimate big corporations out there. They always have that. If they make real things that you'll buy. Because it's all to do with control, isn't it? Anyway, this is almost a year later, as apparently the new rules have a significant loophole. The designated lead regulator of the tiny nation of Ireland has yet to bring an enforcement action against a big tech firm. I say it's not surprising, despite its vows to beef up its threadbare regulatory apparatus. Ireland has a long history of catering to the very companies it's supposed to oversee, having wooed top Silicon Valley firms to the Emerald Isle with promises of low taxes, open access to top officials, and help securing funds to build glittering new headquarters. Now, data privacy experts and regulators in other countries are questioning Ireland's commitment to policing imminent privacy concerns like Facebook's reintroduction of facial recognition software and data sharing with its recently purchased subsidiary called WhatsApp, and Google's sharing of information across its burgeoning number of platforms. This is from Politico, this article. I'll put this article up for you to read in its entirety. It's interesting. Don't think it's just Ireland. Ireland was encouraged with it by the EU Central Bank to borrow, and do well, etc., and to bring in these big companies that would pay off the debts. Well, they're bankrupt now in Ireland, because you can look up. It might be on my site too, but you can look up the talks that they had with the central bank head, the central bank of the European Union. That is, they have a big central bank for that, who dictates to them because they're in so much debt now. Money is the biggest power out there, really, really is. As I say, they can force you to not have children. They can force all the negative population reduction techniques to be forced upon people or women who can't afford children. And having children at school is phenomenally expensive now. It isn't just little notepads you're buying them nowadays, is it? They want electronic ones, and they want the latest. And the school's constantly telling them they need more and more, or the better ones are a bit left behind. Anyway, I say Ireland definitely has been hammered, and money will keep them under the boot, the jackboot, you might say, for a long time, maybe forever. Japan's child population declines for the 38th year in a row. I mean, that was a record low. I'll put that one up, I mentioned it earlier. And also, I'll put up Britain. Again, Britain, there's nothing happening in Britain that wasn't foreseen by those who manage Britain. They've got the mass knifing going on all over the place. They have a lawless system of gangs on motorbikes going around, literally. They call them scooters or mopeds, robbing, and have been for years. Now the schools are putting in knife arches at the gates. A stabbing epidemic grips Wild West Britain, that's the title of the article. An outsider looking into the country will, you know, I'm sure it's the same. You could give the same story about any country and it'd terrify the folk to go there. But the fact is, Britain does have traveller warning guides out there for travellers who want to come in for holidays into London, different cities, because it's so bad now. When it's a lawless system, believe you me, it could be prevented altogether. It could be dealt with much more severely than it's even attempted, but it hasn't happened. So there's other purposes happening behind it for to make this all happen. Something else will come out of all of this. Never mind just the restrictions on everybody, obviously, like stopping searches in the streets and so on in Britain. But yeah, there's big arches that to walk through to try to detect any, which are the same things that they've had in the schools and in the States for many years, in fact. But Britain used to pride itself. They didn't have all these problems. Well, Britain, I don't see Britain as what most folk think it is. I don't see any country with an image that's presented to the people, because what you're presented with is to keep you rather naive. And it's often a very different system at work altogether. It's no different than looking at intelligence services and what they work on. You'll never get to the bottom of it. You'll never figure it out. You might think you reason why they did this to that, to this to that, to this to that, but you'll never figure it out. I'm not kidding you. It's meant to be almost schizophrenic, the way that they design that their big escapades into their schemes and their war games and so on. You'll never really figure it out any more than you really figure out why those who really, really do rule Britain allowed it to get to this stage. There'll be some other, there's always other things behind it, and things that'll get out of it that you'd never come across. All you'll see is, that's terrible, and you get emotional, but again, you're back into motion, and you've lost the game as soon as you get emotionally involved. So it is. And also, how to spy on Google and Facebook spying, it says. A free online tool lets you check how tech firms track users' battery levels, Wi-Fi signal strength, and location. That was in the Mail, Daily Mail, Mail Online, of how it happens and so on. One other article too, and it's from a listener, and it's from 2012, And it says how Target, you know, Target figured out a teen girl was pregnant before her father did. And it says every time you go shopping, you share intimate details about your consumption patterns with retailers. And many of those retailers are studying those details to figure out what you like, what you need, and which coupons are most likely to make you happy. You have an idea how completely understood if you go cashless altogether and use their cards for everything. This is which coupons are most likely to make you happy. Target, for example, has figured out how to data mine its way into your womb to figure out whether you have a baby on the way along before you need to start buying diapers. And it gives you an example. Charles Duhigg outlines the New York Times how Target tries to hook parents to be at the crucial moment before they turn into rampant and loyal buyers of all things pastel, plastic and miniature. He talked to Target's statistician, Andrew Pohl, before Target freaked out and cut off all communications about the clues to a customer's impending bundle of joy. Target assigns every customer a guest ID number tied to their credit card name or email address that becomes a bucket that stores a history of everything they've bought and any demographic information Target has collected from them or bought from other sources. Using that, Paul looked at the circle buying data for all the ladies who'd signed up for Target babies registries in the past from the New York Times. And they give you what happened about buying lotion and so on. I noticed women on the baby register were buying larger quantities of unscented lotion around the beginning of their second trimester. All this stuff about you, see? Then you start buying things like calcium, magnesium, about 20 weeks, and et cetera, et cetera. The crawl through the data was able to identify about 25 products that were analysed together, allowed them to assign each shopper a pregnancy prediction score. More importantly, it also estimated her due date to within a small window, so Target could send coupons timed to very specific stages of pregnancy. Anyway, one Target employee spoke to provide a hypothetical example. Take a fictional Target shopper named Jerry Ward, 23, lives in Atlanta, and in March bought a cocoa butter lotion, purse large enough to double as a diaper bag, zinc and magnesium supplements, and a bright blue rug. There's an 87% chance she's pregnant and that her delivery date is sometime in late August. Now, they also have some real articles too, the complaints that the Target had got, because Target was sending coupons out and so on to these people, right? That they think she's going to maybe getting pregnant, or are pregnant. But one was from a father. It says, my daughter got this in the mail, he said. She's still in high school, and you're sending her coupons for baby clothes and cribs. Are you trying to encourage her to get pregnant? The manager didn't have any idea what the man was talking about. He looked at the mailer. Sure enough, it was addressed to the man's daughter and contained advertisements for maternity clothing, nursery furniture, and pictures of smiling infants. The manager apologized and then called a few days later to apologize again. It says, on the phone, though, the father was somewhat abashed. I had a talk with my daughter. He says, turns out there's been some activities in my house I haven't been completely aware of. She's due in August. I owe you an apology. So, you understand, you're in a system where you've fallen into all the common mouse traps. By the way, here's coupons that are free. Here's this, blah, blah. You take this customer card for all different stores, and they know all your data and so on, and his preference, and your little discounts, the little mouse traps, they call them, as I say, from the banking industry. And you've given up all your freedoms to privacy. And they know everything about you. Pretty well everything. And not only that, there's articles, stacks of articles about now insurance companies have access to all this data, what you eat, if you love candies and chocolates, etc. You get a bit obese, blah, 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 blah. Because the system we're living in today is, first they're going to come down on smokers, by the way, and cut back on the treatments for any problems that smoking, they say, has caused. And then they're going to follow up with obese people. You're starting to get the picture with everything, folks. You're being trained like a herd by the big farmers who now claim that they own you. They certainly own all your data, and you gave it all up willingly. Aldous Huxley said it in his talks at Berkeley and other places too, in his books and his interviews on television. He said the people really will come to love their servitude. It's kind of like the Bible where Jesus says, my yoke is light. Well, you see, you don't see it as being a heavy burden, giving all this data away. You don't see it right away. You won't see it right away. But you're dealing with a system where you technically are owned when you give all your data and your freedoms away. Huh? Perhaps legally too. So think about it. Then there's DARPA, the big organization that defense uses, or DARPA, Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency. They're also putting out little articles about how this little chip helped a quadriplegic and so on. It might help, because they're really in the business of helping quadriplegics. That's what they're there for, right? Yeah. Huh? This is your big defense advanced research projects for the military-industrial complex. And the guys who gave you, under ARPA, before they added the D to it, they were the ones who ran the computer systems and developed them all for the Cold War. Before they gave it to you, to monitor you. Anyway, they said, can neural implants help you recover your memory? Oh, I've always knew they were the most altruistic system service out there, really, aren't they? So a small trial in 15 patients at Wake Forest Baptist Medical Center, prosthetic memory implant helped patients improve short-term memory by an average of 35%. So there's your PR articles. That's the type of stuff they put out, right? And but then you go into this one here. And DARPA wants brain implants that record from 1 million neurons. They want to jolt the nervous system with electricity, laser, sound waves, and magnets. And the big headline at the top of the page is actually DARPA wants brain interfaces for able-bodied warfighters. So there's the real purpose of it there, right? And yes, they'll experiment with everybody else they can get for free, but it's for able-bodied warfighters. N3 program will create no surgery required. Neurotech that the general public may also find useful. Isn't that interesting? You might find it useful. It says until now that the neuroscience programs at DARPA, the mad science wing of the Department of Defense, have focused on technologies for warfighters who have returned home with disabilities of the brain. Says, but the way the military fights wars is changing, and so must DARPA's priorities. At a conference last week to celebrate DARPA's 60th anniversary, officials described the next frontier of neuroscience research technologies for able-bodied soldiers that give them super abilities. Warfighters need new ways to interface and interoperate with machines, says Al Amondi, manager of DARPA's newest neurotech program. But most of the technologies developed up to this point require surgery. What got us here won't take us there. So the new system, really, where they won't need surgery. They got high tech, they can transmit high fidelity signals between the brain and some external machine without requiring the user be cut open for newing or implementation. So they announced that in March, it says. Odd name, come on, that means that must be a made-up name, surely. It's like E for electronic world, Mond. Anyway, but anyway, if it is or isn't, who cares? It's currently picking researchers who will be funded under the program. And they're going to expect announcements early 2019, so it should be ahead of time now. They've had helmets before and things like that, but of course they have ways now to even go much, much further away from the people or the object or the target to basically interfere with your brain. And getting back to how cruel the world really is. And it is cruel. It's a cruel world. And we've got to remember that. We live in, to an extent, a naive reality we're being indoctrinated with by those who control us all. And it's sad because if you understood the real world, you'd be far more, perhaps, suspicious, definitely more watchful of the powers that are around you and over you. And you'd have more say, perhaps, or you'd make time to say more about things that are happening, if you really would. You understand, this is like Christianity. Christianity was attacked a long time ago. It's still being attacked, naturally. Even the United Nations admits it, which is rather, you know, again, it's rather strange that they even bother to admit it. But Christianity was different before. Of course it was different. And forget all these movies you see. There's no movies of Christians 200 or 300 years ago. We don't have movies about them at the time, for instance, they were made. But the fact is, even before then, Christianity had a recognition that the world was a pretty evil place. They called it the fall. Because it doesn't matter what the fall was. The fall was the fallen nature of humans. The nature that causes or allows the powerful, hungry, evil people of the planet to cause wars and slaughtering and starvations and things like that. And if you forget that, it happens like over and over again. What do you mean taught now to be naive? And Christianity today is for children. Even the songs they put out for Christians today are literally the kind of songs that they'd sing at one time in Sunday school for children. Because adults were taught the harsh realities of history and the world that we live in. And they were taught that the nasty realities of the humans who want power over people. That was essential. And it made you aware of the other side that rules everything and causes the misery. Both in a personal situation or a collective situation. In other words, a more mature people. They weren't shocked by it. They would act on it, or they tried to head off at the past before it happened, that type of thing. But they definitely lived a different type of Christian life, for those who don't really realise that. I'm not talking about big landowners that made everybody miserable and lived like peasants. That did happen in some countries, but not in all the countries. Most of the folk were rather poor themselves. And they also had an idea of what money was and what power was from money. And so they did try to just have enough to get by, but they even taught their children not to love money and not to use it to exploit other people. That was all washed away by steady, steady erosion by the humanists and the atheists and so on, until you end up today where you're worshipping people that are billionaires. So much so you allow them to rule over you without even being elected in different parts of the system and the world. So you should always think about it and try to remember how it all happens around you and how the nasty things happen to your supposedly almost sterile world, sterile existence. At one time we all looked after family members who died in our homes. And you take care of them through all the terrible things that happen to the body before they die. And children would grow up knowing it. And so they realized how valuable human life was, how we are to each other and what is really valuable. That's all gone today. Hospitals deal with all these things. And then undertakers deal with the rest of it. And the last you'll see of any member is perhaps at a funeral service. And that's it. It's all a bit rather unreal to children growing up. Whereas before, they were present in the homes when it was happening. That's an essential part. Dying is an essential part of understanding what life is and living the life. But it certainly made people more compassionate and more forgiving towards other people for things. Do you understand how easy it is to strip you of your defences for survival? Or even a decent society? So it's all one and the same thing. I could go into, I could just finish off if I could even squeeze them in, to do with, again, your own nations. But one article, I'll just touch on it, 50,000 animals been killed in 7 years. In 7 years, 50,000. And the Ministry of Defence's top secret port and down research base by being shot, blown up, gassed or poisoned. And they say the search is used to protect armed forces personnel overseas. I know these are for special forces, at least they used to. You go in and they'd shoot at sheep, for instance, to wound them or to kill them, and then they'd go in and have to patch them up, things like that. Yeah. That's the way it is, folks. But Portland Downs they've got biowarfare facilities there and everything, too. You've got to think of these things. Don't turn your mind away from it because it's unpleasant. If you don't understand the horrific things that run the world or in the world, and it isn't just one nation that's got them, they've all got them, these facilities, then you couldn't make the world a better place if you decided to be ignorant of it all. It's not going to happen. Forget all this, don't look at the negative. That's not negative, it's horrible. It's a horror thing, and you must look at it. It's the only way change can ever happen. Another article, too, the past Portland Down can't hide, and to talk about Britain's nerve gas tests, etc. I would use them on young airmen, volunteers, etc. But every country did that. Canada did the same thing, too. But articles back in the 80s about Canadians, the last of them who were sprayed overhead by aerial spraying on battlefields, like the practice battlefields inside Canada. And they're told it was just to test different chemicals that wouldn't do them any harm, and they all died, people of cancers and things. And you find it in every country if you go digging for the old news articles, when news would tell you a lot more than they do now. And then you have another one too, Operation LEC. It was in Canada, the US Army Chemical Corps Operation Dispersed Microscopic Zinc Cadmium Sulfide particles over much of the US and Canada, and it did over Winnipeg, in order to test dispersal patterns and the geographic range of chemicals or biological weapons. These are carcinogenic things. They used them in Britain too, off the coast of Norfolk, from basing ships blown into the mainland and testing it too. We're all used like this, folks, in this great civilized system we live in, where we're taught not to look at the negative. I'll put some of these articles up anyway, just because I've got them up anyway right now, not because I could tie them into my talks, but you've got to stop being so naive. And hopefully there's enough people can handle this rather depressing stuff. It can be depressing, sure it is. But if you can handle it, at least you become a stronger person. And perhaps down the road, you or your children or somebody will speak out too about these things, because you understand, you get the same characters that do all the, for instance, these warfare buy-off things, the same character, and the big chemical companies involved in for very fast bucks and all the rest of it, and growing food and all the rest of it that you're eating. You better think of these things. We are technically, like Charles Fort said, he said we're farmed, he says, which means you must have farmers, eh? And that's the only way you can get really positive change. Not the elite creating the NGO massive armies to protest the very things that they want done, you know. Strip me off your food supply, strip me off your protein supply, strip me off a heat supply down the road. You better think about it. It's a very, very deceptive world indeed. As I say, at least as the older Christians knew at one time. And they were aware, because of its history, that they were living through at the time. They were very, very well aware of it, with all the incredible wars throughout Europe and elsewhere. Some of them lasted 100 years or more. Some of them never stopped, I think. But we live in such a happy, happy television-created fictional reality now, don't we? Well, that's it for today. I better get on with processing this and getting up, and maybe I'll try and go into more of a teaching thing next week, hopefully, I think, depending on the different circumstances and that's happening around me at the moment too. From myself, Alan Watt from Ontario, Canada, it's good night to me. Your God or your gods go with you.